Hello and welcome to the latest edition of Football Talk from the Yorkshire Post, where we'll be discussing some of the latest talking points from the world of football with members of our football writing team. On this week's episode, we're joined by Chief Football Writer for the Yorkshire Post, Stuart Rayner, and Football Writer for the Yorkshire Post, Bill Mopshall, to discuss all of the latest developments affecting our local clubs. Don't forget you can keep up to date with all the football news across Yorkshire and beyond by logging onto our website at yp.sport@nationalworld.com, as well as checking out our various Twitter feeds, the main one being at YP Sport. If you search for Yorkshire Post Sport, Yorkshire Post Football, or even Sheffield Sport on Facebook, you can find us there as well. And if you have any questions for our writers, you can get in touch using those various Twitter or Facebook pages, or email us directly with the subject matter as footballtalkpodcast@yp.sport@nationalworld.com.
yorkshirepost.co.uk.
As mentioned earlier in the intro, this week we're joined by Chief Football Writer for the Yorkshire Post, Stuart Rayner, and Football Writer for the Yorkshire Post, Leon Wobshaw. Good morning, guys.
Morning.
Right, this week we saw Leeds United continue their fine form in 2024 with a 1-0 victory over Bristol City, which saw the Whites briefly claim second spot in the table. This was then followed by a 4-1 victory over Plymouth in the second leg of their FA Cup tie, which now sees them into the next round. Hull City came away with all 3 points in their 1-0 win over Millwall. Rotherham United fell to a 2-0 defeat when they hosted Southampton. Sheffield Wednesday had to share the points when they welcomed Watford to Hillsborough before falling to a 4-0 thumping at the hands of Huddersfield Town. Sheffield United fell to a heavy 5-0 defeat at the hands of Aston Villa, and we'll be covering both Sheffield clubs later on in the podcast. Barnsley had to settle for a point after playing out a 1-1 draw with Bolton Wanderers, while in League Two, Bradford City played out a 0-0 draw with AFC Wimbledon, and both Doncaster Rose and Harrogate Town played out 1-1 draws with Sutton United and Stockport County, respectively. But first, we start this week's podcast with a review of the transfer activities of our Yorkshire clubs. So, Stuart, who do you feel made the most of the January transfer window, and who do you feel had a poor transfer window?
Well, I think for a lot of clubs, not just in Yorkshire, but across the board, across the leagues, across the world even, you know, it was quite a cautious transfer window. I think the penny had dropped with quite a few English clubs that the authorities are taking financial fair play seriously now, and they need to do the same. So it wasn't the most dramatic window ever. I mean, we saw clubs like Leeds and Sheffield United get the positions they targeted, but no more than that, say, which is sensible under the circumstances. I think the one that leapt out, Hull City clearly signed some very good players. It feels like it's almost been a bit of a reset. They've had a couple of weeks off and just reset the squad. You know, we know from his time at Middlesbrough what a good player Ryan Giles is. You know, we saw from last season in the Championship how effective Anas Zrouri was. He looks like another good signing. We've said it earlier in the window about what a shrewd signing Billy Sharp was. So certainly from an on-field perspective, it looks like a real good window for Hull, a real sign of intent. What I would sort of caveat it with... Absolutely. Leon looked at the financial accounts for last year, so not covering this transfer window, with an 86% rise in the wages, and they've clearly taken a big gamble that they're going to give out, you know, throw everything at getting up this season. And if they don't, I think, you know, there will be consequences down the line in terms of them having to sell key players and what have you. And it's, you know, it's a risky situation at the best of times, but I think it's riskier still when your target is the playoffs, because we all know you can't bank on what happens in the playoffs. You know, anything's possible, but, you know, bad decision here, penalty shootout lost there, and it's all over. So it's a risky window from Hull City. But I think if you look at it from a purely football perspective, I think after a difficult December and January, they look really geared up to give this a real push. But as I say, they are going to have to, you know, because of the situation they've created for themselves. In terms of bad windows, I would say Sheffield Wednesday really stick out, not just in terms of who they weren't able to bring in, obviously very keen on a striker in particular, but also in terms of who they weren't able to get out. And you know, as you've alluded to, we'll talk about them a bit more later. But you do worry now that there are players in that squad who know that the manager was actively trying to move them on in the window. I mean, he said publicly he was open to offers for the likes of Reece James, Michael Smith, Lee Gregory. You know, some of those are going to have to perform for him. There's going to be some players, you know, again talking about the finances, who are going to get paid to not play for Sheffield Wednesday for the rest of the season now they're at the FA Cup, because they won't be included on the squad list because there's too many players there. And it just feels like, certainly speaking to Danny Roll after the Sheffield Wednesday Watford game the other week, it felt like his morale's taken a hit as well. And I think just generally a bit of momentum has been taken out of Sheffield Wednesday on the field and off it. So we'll talk more on the field later on. But it felt like a bad window for them. I think for a lot of clubs it was just underwhelming. But then, you know, you look at some clubs and you say, well, it was more about, you know, keeping a certain player. You know, Harrogate keeping Abraham Addo, for example, was massive for them, rather than keeping Victor Johansson. So I don't think there were many sort of outstanding windows. But as I say, with those caveats, Hull was the one that really leapt out for me.
Yeah, I mean, you look at Hull's squad, and I mean, it looks a playoff squad, doesn't it? I mean, you look at the amount of attacking options they've got in their armoury. You know, Cavalio, Giles, forget Philogene as well. He obviously came in for $5 million in the summer window, and it definitely looks like a jam today, doesn't it? I mean, you do sort of wonder about them further down the line if they don't manage to make it, and how they're going to fit everything in with FFP. I think risk as well is a right word from Stuart, but you know, Liam Messina as well. I mean, if he doesn't manage to get Hull in the playoffs and this season, with you know everything that's been handed to him, you've got to sort of worry a little bit about him, really, because you know that squad really should be it really should be getting into the playoffs from there. And given the you know the outlay that they've had, you know, you look at the figures, and is it wages 131% of revenue? I mean, that's huge, isn't it? Wages up from 86%, as Stuart said. It's a gamble and a risky one, but you know if it ends up with Hull getting in the playoffs and somehow you know getting to the Premier League. I mean, one thing as well. I mean, it looks obviously the race for automatic promotion. I think the odds are that someone's going to be very disappointed to miss out, and you wonder if there's a psychological you know effect for one or two of those teams going into playoffs. That's a bit further down the line, but yeah, it's a huge commitment by Hull. A fair amount of money, but there's some really good players there. You know, at the other end, you look at Leeds, who've kept the powder dry, waiting to the end, and Daniel Farke has been very consistent in his approach, saying we'll only buy, you know, not just the right players, but the right characters as well, with quality. And you know, Conor Roberts certainly falls into that bracket. I agree with what Stuart said about Sheffield Wednesday. I think the issue there was they were just going public with so many targets, weren't they, and then just not getting them. And it was obviously, you know, the to-ing and fro-ing with Maguire, but I think it's Blackburn who've got egg on the face, you know, a lot more than that. I mean, that one seems a real mess, doesn't it? Talk of, you know, clicking the wrong buttons on the registration form, this, that, and the other. And yeah, I mean, I think Middlesbrough will, I think supporters will have liked them to bring in another striker. That's what they've been sort of missing a little bit this season. But you know, when you listen to the reasons why they didn't do that, it's you know, there's sort of sense in there. It is a risky market in January, and you don't necessarily get that much value for money. And yeah, I think there's part of Middlesbrough as well, but maybe holding back and thinking, well, you know, hopefully they might make it in the playoffs, but it probably does look unlikely. But more in terms of keeping something back for the summer window, where you contrast it with Hull, who just got, they've really gone for it now, haven't they? And there's a bit of a difference in approach there, isn't there?
Yeah, and I think, you know, in the here and now, most fans would rather be in Hull's position, but you only need to look a couple of years down the line, and it could be very different. You know, I think we all know what a good custodian Steve Gibson is for Middlesbrough Football Club, and what a vocal proponent he is of financial fair play. So he's hardly going to, certainly wouldn't look very good if he was sort of throwing caution to the wind. As you know, let's be fair, he did it in the past in the 90s and what have you, before those rules existed. But
he did parachute payments as well, Stuart, didn't he, when the first went down? But he had something in his arm with him, didn't he? Yeah,
exactly. It's a different landscape now, and as I said, as you can see across the window, I think clubs are more wary, Hull apart, of the need to sort of stick by these rules, because we've seen with the 10-point deduction for Everton, you know, if it could happen to them, it could happen to everyone, and there'll be a lot of nervous chairmen at the moment, double checking their accounts. And as I say, we've seen from clubs who clearly felt they needed to strengthen, not strengthening or trying to move on players, even that the penny has dropped to some extent, and it might be that those clubs who hold their nerve, like Middlesbrough and others, to be fair, are sort of made to, you know, are vindicated in the longer run. It's just a test of patience for everyone in the short term. But you know, that's life. That's football. Sometimes you do have to just be a bit sensible about it.
Yeah, I think there's got to be a bit of pragmatism, and obviously the position that you're in as well. I mean, you look at Rotherham, and look, we all hope they do manage to pull off a great escape. But you know, at the minute, I think it's fair to say that it's pretty unlikely. And you know, we've had enough teams in the past from Yorkshire, you know, been relegated, Rotherham themselves, Barnsley, and you know, you're looking at £7-8 million loss. And you know, when you're going into a transfer window in January, how much do you sort of spend, realizing that you're going to lose money if you do get relegated at the end of the season? And then, you know, that could impact on, I mean, the budgets will be impacted anyway if you get relegated to League One. But you know, it's pointless throwing all your eggs in one basket, if you like, and having nothing at all. So you know, when you're in Rotherham's position, you've got to look at a bit of the medium term. So there's sort of that that element as well.
Time will tell. You know, we're not very familiar with these how these players will perform in English football. A couple of them anyway, but they've certainly shown a bit of ambition, a bit of fight. I say my only concern, as I said in the previous podcast, is that because they've changed manager, there isn't that joined up thinking. But hopefully they can sort of reverse engineer that and get to a point where these signings, you know, do them some good. But you certainly couldn't accuse them of just sort of sitting back and accepting their fate, which was, I think, probably the most important thing for them this window.
I must write that down, Stuart. Reverse engineer. I love that podcast. I don't know what it means, but I like it.
And now we turn our attention to the league action, which took place over the last week, starting with Middlesbrough, who had to settle for a point after playing out a 1-1 draw with Sunderland in a game which had to wait until after the hour mark for the deadlock to be broken. Now, this sees Michael Carrick's men just 4 points outside the top six, with a visit from Bristol City next on the cards for them. What was your assessment of the game, Leon?
Yeah, it was a bit of an opportunity lost. I think if you look at the game in the round, maybe a draw was a fair result. But I thought for the bulk of the second half, I thought Sunderland shaded the first half. But you know, for a good half hour or so of the second half, Middlesbrough were in the box seat, and they scored a good goal. I mean, we mentioned a little bit earlier about, you know, the fact they haven't sort of filled that, bringing that sort of striker in who most supporters would have wanted. But they've got players up there who they can play in a nine role, and Marcus Force scored a scored a really good goal. It was, you know, great control with a touch with one foot and a drilled finish. And yeah, they were set fair. You know, you know, to get a rare league double over Sunderland. But yeah, they just switched off. It was a really sloppy goal. Got caught on the counter, and you know, play switched to the right flank. And you know, I think it's fair to say that Tom Glover in goals should have done better in terms of saving the shot. And yeah, it was a bit sloppy and disappointing from a Middlesbrough perspective. They'll have had the moments this season, but they've struggled with, I think, probably a bit of ruthlessness in both ends of the boxes. Really, they're a very good watch between the thirds. Play some lovely football on the day, but you can accuse them of not scoring enough and giving away some cheap goals, even though that they are a good watch. I mean, you look at them last season with Akpom and Archer. They had the ruthless edge in front of goal, and they've sort of lost that. It's fair to say, and I think it's just how they've managed to. If they are gonna, they're amongst a pack of clubs, aren't they? Really, you've still got a little bit of you know, hope to creep into the playoffs. But you know, every time when there's drop points, that gap can get a little bit more, so that, you know, the margin for error does, you know, you can't be affording yourself too much of it, can you? But, and how do they fill this number nine role? The talk of force can play there. Sam Greenwood, he in his option there, even though he's not an orthodox number nine. So we'll have to see. It's gonna have to certainly get a run of wins. You would think in the not too distant future, they've got Bristol City at home, and they've got I think they've got three out of four away, and one of them's Leicester. So yeah, the clock's starting to tick.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think Middlesbrough should be giving up on the playoffs by any means. No. That's, you know, the beauty of the Championship, that it's accessible to so many clubs for such a long part of the season. But you know, I think really it's about coaching and fine-tuning this team over the next couple of months, so that if they don't make the playoffs, the platform is there, that they only need, you know, one or two players adding to have a real good push for next season. I think that's the best way to look at it, because as I say, even if you get into the playoffs, they're such a lottery that you can't really bank on anything. So you always have to be thinking about, you know, what if we don't go up this season? You know, where do we need to be that, as I say, we can sort of improve this team with minimal number of additions. But yeah, I think we've seen what Middlesbrough are capable of this season, and we're seeing, you know, the areas they're just a bit short. And you know, I think Senny Dieng being at the African Cup of Nations has hurt them a bit, because you know, you can see the level has dropped a bit with Glover. That's not the only mistake he's made. Obviously, we've talked many times about how the injuries have affected them, and you know, the other big theme of the season has been lack of ruthlessness. So it's been good to see Force come back the last couple of weeks and really, you know, add something in that respect. He's one of those players who his motivation for the rest of the season needs to be, I want to show that. You don't need to sign a player in my position. I can be a key player for you in the second half of the season. And I guess from Carrick's point of view, it's just a case of working out whether that is, as Leon says, playing down the middle as a number nine or attacking from wide. But this is a time to really sort of get your head around those things, work those things out, and then go and sign what you don't have in the summer, hopefully.
I think the way they'll do it, Stuart, I mean, they've had some, if they do manage it, which is unlikely, is they're going to need some luck on the injury front as well. That's been a big story, hasn't it, in the sort of first half or two-thirds of the season. If they can, you know, Josh Coleman's had an issue with his groin. If they can just somehow keep him fit, Lattie Laff's been out as well. And if they come back, they've got Riley McGree to come back into contention as well. If they've sort of got as many attacking options, if you like, they might not necessarily be, you know, bona fide number nines, but you can sort of mix it around a little bit, can't you? They've obviously got Finazad as well. He played in a forward position against Sunderland. You can sort of, there's a bit of an element of making do with men, but they're just I think if they are going to sneak in, they're going to need a good run on the injury front for sure.
Now, as I mentioned earlier at the start of the podcast, I want to focus on Sheffield United and Sheffield Wednesday, who both suffered heavy defeats this past week. Let's start with Sheffield United and their 5-0 loss at home to Aston Villa. Now, this most definitely will not help in their hope for survival this season. But what did you make of it, Stuart?
Well, worrying, to be honest with you. Worrying because, you know, for the last couple of months, really, or certainly a fair few weeks, we've been talking about how Chris Wilder's return to the club has got them fighting again. And, you know, for all their other shortcomings, they've been competitive in all the games. Well, you know, this was the exception to that rule. Granted, Aston Villa are, you know, a very good side, albeit they've won one in five games in the league, but they're a very good side. They're a much better side than, for example, Burnley, Paul Heckingbottom's final opponents. But it was a worrying flashback to that Burnley game. I was at both of the matches, and it was the way that they collapsed, you know, four goals in 18 first half minutes, and really poor goals, you know, no pressure on the ball when the player was passing it through. Too often the runner he was passing to in too much space. They were really poor goals to concede and a poor performance. So this can go one of two ways. This can either be, this is Sheffield United for the rest of the season. They've finally been ground down and broken, and you know they're going to be a free lunch for anyone who plays them for the rest of the season. Or this can be a blip, and you know, Luton Town away on Saturday is the stage for them to come out and show actually that was just a one-off. We are still fighting for this. You know, we are still giving our all, and we're still in this. And you know, I think we'll learn a lot at Kenilworth Road from where that goes, because if they were to lose there, you know, it may not even be Luton who are in the spot they're chasing come the end of the season, but Luton, I think, will be 13 points ahead with 14 games to go. That they're getting to the point of being uncatchable from a Sheffield United perspective. So it really, really is important, first and foremost, that they put in that performance and then that they get a result to just give them something to fight for the rest of the season. Because, you know, I think realistically, we know it's going to take something very special for them to stay up. But it's about showing pride in the shirt. It's about showing the supporters that you care. And I don't think it was so much that they didn't care against Aston Villa, but they just lost, you know, the one thing really that Chris Wilder had brought them. So it was a worrying evening if you were a Sheffield United supporter, and quite a lot of them, and I can't blame them for it, didn't hang around to watch all of it. There were a lot of people left after 20 minutes, a lot of people left after 30 minutes, a lot of people left at the end of the first half. And again, if the supporters are sort of losing that fight, that is massive as well. But say you couldn't criticise them, because why should they hang around and watch that when the performance from the players was just so abject?
I think it's a good game if that's the right phrase, but it's a game on Saturday where they'll Chris Wilder will find out a bit about his players, won't he? The game at a side who were down there at Luton, and fair to say it's a Premier League venue that brings its own challenges. The crowd will be really on top of the Sheffield United players, and obviously Luton have a way of playing which will be a test for the visiting players. But you have to sort of factor in the crowd as well, and it's a place, you know, there'll be no hiding place, and after a big defeat, you know, Chris Wilder, you would have thought he'd be able to find out about some of his players there. So yeah, that'll be an interesting exercise in itself. You know, we've spoken about the non-negotiables that Chris Wilder expects from his players. You know, that those sort of qualities, not just, you know, not just in terms of technical ability, but in terms of the mindset as well. So they'll all be on the line on Saturday.
It's the worst possible game for somebody who wants to hide. It's the best possible game for somebody with bottle who wants to stand up and show it. Yes. So
they're good professionals, aren't they? As simple as that.
Exactly. So as Leon says, you know, it'll sort the wheat from the chaff a bit in terms of Sheffield United.
And next we turn our attention to Sheffield Wednesday, who have also had a rough week when they visited Yorkshire rivals and fellow strugglers Huddersfield Town. The Owls conceded four goals in the space of 12 second half minutes, and due to Huddersfield Town claiming all 3 points on the day, they now find themselves 8 points adrift from safety. Where did it all go wrong, Leon? And what does Danny Roll do to help keep his side in the race for survival? But then we can also talk about the flip side and see how this will affect Huddersfield Town.
Well, it was a bizarre game, Mark. I think anyone who's sort of looking at it from the outside would think 4-0. You know, Sheffield Wednesday have got a real good hiding, and they've been, you know, comprehensively sort of bettered all over the park for, you know, the whole game. But it wasn't really like that. It was a bit of a nothing game, to be quite honest. I actually thought Wednesday probably edged the first half, if anything. Huddersfield started the second half the better, but yeah, the game wasn't particularly going anywhere, and then it was just just an unfathomable defensive implosion. I mean, some of the goals were just so poor from a Wednesday perspective, and goals that you can really stamp out as well. I mean, the first goal came from the corner. Matty Pearson, big central defender who he's got obvious threats from set plays, and he's a big lad as well. He was being marked by Anthony Masaba. You know, instead of either a central defender on the visiting side or a you know, big centre forward. So that was 1-0. That set the tone, and just really poor goals. The third goal, Pedersen on his debut was just ball watching and got caught. Slack passing for the fourth, they got caught out for the second, and yeah, that was the sort of dispiriting thing from a Wednesday point of view. I had issues with the defence, issues with the goalkeeper as well, who looked really, he didn't necessarily have much of a chance with the goals, but I thought he was extremely indecisive on the day, and looked what he probably is, a bit of a kid in a relegation fight. So there might be a decision to make there. Obviously Wednesday are in action on Friday. I mean, it's heightened the pressure for that game. Obviously got heavily beaten, and albeit a much changed side in midweek in the FA Cup. But obviously four goals in two games. And yeah, it's totally a must-win game, isn't it, against Birmingham if they're going to give yourself a chance. But, you know, you look at the away form, and it's, you know, right to say that Danny Rom's come in and he's done some good work, and just to get them in with a sniff of survival is a fair achievement from where they were. But you know, the away form's still been pretty damning all season, apart from, you know, the odd win here and there. Something like seven goals in 15 games, and you know, that's simply not good enough and pointing one way. But the, you know, the annoying thing from a Wednesday perspective is that they weren't sort of out footballed, if you like, by Huddersfield and given a lesson. It was just, it really was self inflicted. But you know, on the flip side of the coin, Huddersfield, you take anything. And you know, we were speaking about the transfer window earlier, and I think the ironic thing was that Huddersfield have been noise at the end of the year about bringing in a few forwards. They did that. And then they both came up with issues. Recently came up with a groin problem in the first half, and Radulovic came off in the second half as well with an issue. And Huddersfield ended up making light of that. They put Josh Caroma down the middle, and he made hay while the sun shone. And I think one of the big people to mention is Ben Wiles. He's had a rotten time since coming to Huddersfield from Rotherham, and he's never really got going, but he really looked at home in a number 10 role. And other pluses as well, I thought Brody Spencer was good on a custom role at left back. And in a Huddersfield situation, you really take anything that comes on offer. And had a little bit, I suppose, thinking back, actually got rid of Darren Moore last week, and you know, Penny for his thoughts, he's probably thinking, well, where's that sort of four goal salvo come from? But yeah, good for a good great day for John Worthington, Huddersfield Town supporters, and Kevin Nagle was able to tweet us about something that wasn't really controversial for us.
Yeah, it was great to see Huddersfield, you know, go for the throat once they got in front. I mean, it didn't sound just from following Leon's tweets of the game and sort of reading reports as though the shackles were really off in the way that we were promised in that first hour or so. But no. You know, we saw them under Darren Moore, you know, sometimes go 1-0 up in games and not really force the issue. So, you know, it was good to see that they piled on the goals, and yeah, they were helped a lot by Sheffield Wednesday. I mean, that fourth goal in particular was just absolutely awful. But that's not that's not Huddersfield's problem. They showed that ruthlessness to recognise, you know, there's a weakness here. Let's pounce on it. So that was really good to see, and hopefully, you know, that can be a template going forward. It seems very likely that in the longer term, certainly there's going to be a different manager in charge, but also just really good to see, you know, as Leon's alluded to, a boyhood Huddersfield fan who's grown up in the area, who's played for the club, who's worked for the academy, who loves the club. It's always good to see, it doesn't matter what the club is, to see, you know, someone like that having the day in the sun, and, you know, maybe more to come, fingers crossed, but that was really heartwarming. I think from Sheffield Wednesday, you know, that I don't think you can box off the FA Cup game that followed it. I know it's a different competition. I know it was a different team, but the way it just adds to the narrative, the fact that having conceded, you know, what was it, four goals in 18 minutes at the game Leon was at, to then concede 3 and 8 second half minutes against Coventry, it just adds to this impression of the roof coming in, and it just feels to me, you know, they went into the new year, they started the new year with real momentum, it felt. They'd won, you know, when you go up to the Cardiff FA Cup game, they'd won 6 out of 9. They made a couple of early signings in the transfer window, and it just felt they had momentum, whereas other clubs, particularly Huddersfield, were kind of stuck in the mud a bit. That's really dissipated now. You know, no wins in 6. I mean, granted, they've played some good teams in that, but nevertheless, you know, the big picture is that the wind has come out of their sails a bit. It's not irretrievable, but it is sort of worrying. As I sort of alluded to earlier, it seems almost like morale's been a bit damaged by what happened and didn't happen in the transfer window. And it just feels like there's something to claw back. And, you know, a good win against Birmingham on Friday, you know, maybe by the time some people are listening to this, they'll know the results of it. But a good win that night, you know, could get things back on track. But it does feel at the moment as though things have just ebbed away, and in typical Sheffield Wednesday fashion, I'm afraid to say, it feels like they themselves are partly to blame for it. You know, particularly we've seen numerous occasions in the last, goodness knows how long, of boardroom decisions in particular just sucking a bit of the momentum out of that club. And whilst it's certainly not all down to that, say there's on the field things as well, it does feel as though things have just cooled a bit when they were running quite hot at the start of January.
I think they've just got to change the narrative really quickly, haven't they, Stuart? I mean, it's in the next, I'd say the next 4, 5, 6 games, if they don't sort of provide themselves hope there, you know, the narrative is going to be about, it's going to be about chance theory, it's going to be about season ticket prices, and you just wonder if Wednesday's position as well in the next month doesn't significantly improve. You know, there's a hell of a lot of players there who have a contract in the summer, and you just wonder if they'd sort of, I don't know, you know, psychologically throwing in the towel a little bit, really. And, but, you know, he's done a hell of a lot of, it's important to remember that, you know, Danny Rowe's done some really good work there on the training ground. They've all spoken really highly of him. And you just have to hope for his stake on Wednesday that he can, you know, manufacture a response. You know, they really do need to beat Birmingham on Friday. And get another bit of a sugar rush and a few wins quickly after to keep the fight going. I mean, they're still capable of it, I would say that, but I do think this February period is going to be massive.
Yeah, I mean, we talk about the signings they didn't make, but of course, you know, the run they were on before was without these signings as well. So he can clearly do it with this group of signings. It's not beyond them. I say it just feels like they've taken a real psychological hit. You know, and on the flip side, you know, you look at Huddersfield and all of a sudden I think there's the five clubs directly above them are all within a win of them. You know, so if a new manager can come in and really hit the ground running, it could be really positive for them too. But I think for both clubs, February is going to be quite decisive in just shaping the mood of things for the rest of the season.
Yeah, they look Blackburn look really vulnerable, don't they? Mm. They're on a dreadful run. But I mean, fair play to John Worthington. He bought them a little bit of time, hasn't he? Just, you know, with that victory against Sheffield Wednesday. Look, if they get anything from the Southampton game, that is a major bonus, isn't it? And you know, it is pretty unlikely, but. You know, Rotherham still did go there and nick something. But you just won. I mean, they've got two home games after that, Sunderland and Hull. So if they, you know, I think regardless of what happens against Southampton, you know, if they get anything in a bonus, they should still hopefully go into those two games in reasonable spirits. And as Stuart's right to say, there's quite a few other teams just above them who aren't having the best time of it. Stoke as well, who would be... We'll be looking over the shoulders a bit.
And finally this week, we look to Leon for his player of the week before turning to Stuart for his team of the week. So, Leon, who has caught your eye this week?
Yeah, there's quite a few, to be honest, Mark. I mean, Leeds United obviously had a couple of good results in the South West, winning at a good result at Bristol City and then doing the job against Plymouth. Willie Gonto, he's, you know, got a couple of goals. He's put his hand up and back on the scene, so to speak. And whoever in midfield, he just seems to be getting better and better. And he's getting into a real rhythm and he certainly looks a player, doesn't he? And, you know, one or two others. I think Josh Earle at Barnsley making his debut at Bolton, one of his former clubs. He had an excellent first appearance for Barnsley in a big game in his debut as well. So, worth mentioning him, Abu Derek for Harrogate Town on his debut at Stockport, not just his debut for the club, but his Football League debut. He was very impressive by all accounts, so, you know, well done to that young man. But I mean, it's probably a little bit biased because I was at the game, but I'm going to plump for a Huddersfield player. Brody Spencer, as I've said, was very good at left-back when he's a right-back, but I think given what he's sort of been through and he's really looking for some sort of a catalyst for his season, I'll have to say Ben Wiles, who was excellent when he came on in the number 10 role.
And Stuart, who has caught your eye this week?
Well, I mean, in terms of the team, obviously Leon's touched on a couple of them already. Harrogate, a tremendous result, you know, another good result to draw against Stockport County. I don't think anybody could have, you know, budgeted for them picking up points there, so it just keeps the bandwagon rolling. As I mentioned earlier, Hull having gone a couple of weeks without a game and after all the transfer activity, it felt like almost a bit of a reset of the season, so it was important they started that with a win against Millwall. Leeds United, another good week, just keeping this unbeaten start going to the into 2024 yet again. Made it a bit harder than they needed to in the FA Cup, but got the job done against Plymouth, and that's what matters. But yeah, in terms of the result, I just don't think you can look past that Huddersfield win. I've been very critical of Huddersfield the last couple of weeks, but that was a perfect response, and as I say, a real platform for them, and absolutely no doubt whatsoever that John Worthington has to be the caretaker manager of the week as well, I would say. But yeah, a really good week for Huddersfield, and hopefully the start of a real upturn for them.
YorkshirePost.co.uk.
Many thanks to Stuart Rayner and Leon Wopril, who will doubtless join us again soon for more discussions on the Yorkshire football scene. But don't forget, you can keep up to date with all the football news across Yorkshire and beyond by logging on to our website at yp.sport@nationalworld.com. Or if you search for Yorkshire Post Sport, Yorkshire Post Football, or even Sheffield Sport on Facebook, you can find us there as well. If you have any questions for our writers, you can get in touch using those various Twitter or Facebook pages, or email us directly with the subject matter as footballtalkpodcast@yp.sport@nationalworld.com. As ever, many thanks for listening. Look after yourselves, and bye for now.